Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Kuf Chedem and Aleph, four lines from the bottom, Tanur Banan. Hakol chayavim ba'arba'a kosot halalu. Everyone is obligated in these four kosot. Echad anashim, ve'echad nashim, men, women, ve'echad tinokot, and children. Amri v'huda, v'chi ma to'elet ish the tinokot, v'yayin. What's the point of giving the children yayin? Now, the way the Rashbam reads this is halo p'turim min ha-mitzvot. Aren't they p'turim min ha-mitzvot? I would have read it maybe a little bit differently, which is, what's the benefit to them? I mean, in terms of wine, they don't enjoy it. It's not derech chayrut for them. There's nothing in the wine that get them excited or engage them in the night of the Seder. So why would you give tinokot yayin? Ella, mechalgin lahem glayot vegozim. You distribute to them roasted, and here it seems to be roasted wheat kernels, and egozim and nuts. Be'erev Pesach, before Pesach, kedei shelo yishnu vishalu. So they should not fall asleep, and they should ask questions. So here you have the idea of engaging the children in the night of Pesach, and therefore in order to engage them, you get them excited. You give them out these nuts, these roasted kernels, in order that they get excited about that night. Amru alav al Rabbi Akiva. Shaya mechalek layot vegozim letinokot b'erev Pesach. The Rabbi Akiva's practice was to do this. Others have the gear, so that was Rabbi Tarfon. Today shalo yishnu vishalu. So they don't fall asleep and they would ask questions at night. Again, to engage them in the dialogue of the night of Pesach. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Chutfim matzot v'lele psachim b'shvil tinokot shelo yishnu. Now here a question on the girsa, if it's chutfim matzot or chutfim matzah v'lele psachim for the children so they will not fall asleep. Now in terms of what this chutfim matzah is, chutef means to grab or to steal away the matzah. So Rashi gives two interpretations. The first interpretation Rashi gives is magbim etakav ara b'shvil tinokot shishalu. You lift up the seder plate in order that the children would ask questions about it, the Seder plate. That's one. V'itim mifaresh chutfin matzah uklim maher. You eat quickly. And he says, zehu ikar. Says that makes a lot of sense based on the next piece of the Gemara, which is that we try to keep the children engaged. So you eat quickly so that they're still part of the Seder, so they're not too tired to be a part of the Seder. That's what chutfin means, chutef, to steal away in the sense of speed. That we want you to eat quickly so that they can be engaged in the night. That's the way Rashi gives you two interpretations. Again, one is to lift up the Seder plate. The other one is to eat quickly. The term interpretations of Rashi are based on matzah, which is a magbina matzah or chotfima matzah, means eating quickly. In the Rashbam, he says, v'yesh gersim, some have the girs of matzot. He says, it's lifting up the kara that has matzah umaror or a bit tavshalim. And then he says himself, the Rashbam, v'linira, chotfim is salkim et alechem miyada tinokot, shlo yu Shenim bitoch machal harbe. You steal away the food from the kids so they don't eat too much and fall asleep. They eat a lot, they get tired, and they're going to fall asleep. So we limit the amount of food that they can have so they don't get so much matzah, they don't eat so many of the carbohydrates so that they stay awake. Ve'ishalu kishiru ha-shinuim. And we see all these changes, the last questions. Shanosim ha-keira le-tinokot, because we do things that engage them. And he says that that's also muchach l'shon ha-tosefta, that makes sense from the tosefta. So far we have all these interpretations of chotfim matzah, which is lifting up the Seder plate, or chotfim matzot, lifting up the maror, the matzah, all the props of the Seder night. Stealing away, which would mean eat quickly, in order that the children are still around and awake for the Haggadah. Or the other one is that to remove the food from the children, so that they will not fall asleep, because they won't have too much to eat. Plus, they'll ask questions about how come today is different than the other nights. How come here we're taking the food away when we normally allowed to eat? So now that's all of the interpretations that are brought down here, which leads to the question of where we got to the position where chotfim et ha-matzah led to the stealing of the afikomen.
In the Rambam, he codifies the locha as chotfim matzah ze miyad ze, kedei lasot shinui shishalu abanim. And in the Maram Chalava, he mentions, "Hainu gozlim ze miyad ze l'simcha, kedei shishalu atinokot v'lo yishnu." And the Chalk Yaakov quotes these as the possibility for the minog in our areas that the children steal away with the afikoman. Although the Orchot Chaim is very critical of this minhag and says that it was made up and it has no basis or source within the Gemara or the Poskim. And even worse, it's as if we're educating our children to be ganavim, which is completely inappropriate. Though you could explain here.
Yeah, the truth is that it's not necessarily related to stealing of the avikomer, even though chotef means to steal. Chotfim matzah or matzot would mean to steal the matzah. But the idea is it's a way to engage the children in the night, to keep them engaged to the Seder night. By having them steal afikoman, and then the afikoman, which is something at the end of the meal, it's something that keeps them engaged throughout the Seder night. First of all, the afikoman, you break, you do yachatz at the beginning of the Seder, before the Haggadah. The afikoman comes after Shulchan Aruch. So here you have a span of time that really incorporates or encompasses the whole Seder, and therefore engaging the children through that, through the afikoman, makes somewhat of sense. Whether there's any real source from Chotvim HaMatzah Matzot, in this Gemara, it's a question, well, there are those that interpret that way, but you see here from the major Rishonim that they don't have the interpretation or meaning of stealing the matzah. Most of the stealing the matzah is away from the children, so they don't eat. Based on the Rashbam here, at least it would be the parents removing the matzah, not the children stealing it. But in the spirit of what's being said here, it's not far-fetched to say that they should be engaged in the night, and that having chotvim matzah meaning that they steal away the afikoman, it's a good way to keep them engaged, as we see, that they stay engaged, they are excited about that, and that's what keeps them involved in the Seder night. There is nothing in the Gemara about paying ransom or anything like that, but obviously the props of the night, or the pieces of the night that helps keep the children engaged is a very important part of this, because they're the central part of the night of Pesach. Tanya, Amru Alav, Al Rabbi Akiva. Mi Amav, Lo Amar Yigye Itni Amod Mi Beit HaMidrash. Given ever said to the parents, the fathers that were in the Beit Midrash, time has come for you to get up, to leave. He wouldn't throw anybody out of the Beit Midrash, except for chutz mi'arvei pesachim, ve'erev yom ha'kippurim. Erev Pesach and Erev yom ha'kippurim, you throw them out. Erev Pesach b'shvil tinokot kadesh lo yishnu. And Erev Pesach so that the children don't fall asleep. Ve'erev yom ha'kippurim kadesh she'achilu et b'nehem. And Erev yom kippur so they give them food to eat. So they sent the fathers home to ensure that the children ate before Yom HaKippurim, as well as the fathers ate before Yom HaKippurim. So that was important. And also, prior to Pesach, we'd send them home so that the children would go to sleep. The Rashbam brings, what does that mean on Erev Pesach? So first of all, that they could put the children to sleep, take a nap in the afternoon. And the other thing is that they can start right away at nightfall, so that they don't delay in the beginning of the Seder. They don't tarry at all in the beginning of the Seder. They start immediately at nightfall. Tosafot takes issue with both of these. He says, first of all, you don't need the father home to have the child take a nap, but at night. So if they won't sleep at night, so they can put him down for a nap in the afternoon. He says, first of all, that reasoning of the Rashbam doesn't make so much sense. And the second reason of the Rashbam, which is that they should start immediately, he don't have to leave early on Erev Pesach to do that. They just have to leave, you know, a little before the Seder to leave the whole Erev Pesach in order to hash start on time. Says he doesn't see it. Therefore, Tosafot says he thinks the girsa here is wrong. And the girsa is Leilei Pesachim, on the night of Pesach. Says the practice was that on the night of Yom Tov, they used to learn. They used to go to the Beit Midrash to learn. With the exception of Leil Pesach. Leil Pesach, he'd throw the fathers out of the Beit Midrash and say, go home so that you can do the Seder on time and then you can learn with the kids. And so therefore he changes the girsa from Arvei Pesachim to Leilei Pesachim ve'erev Yom HaKippurim. And that's how the Tosafot makes more sense out of it. But the obvious message is that this is the night of the kids. And therefore they are the central piece of the night. And everything done tonight revolves around them. In order that we have the conveyance of the story, the whole idea of the Mesora or Vigata the Bincha is the central theme of the night, and therefore the kids have to be the characters that are there engaged, and so we do things to ensure that that happens. This is also the proof what Rashi brought before, where he says that this subsequent Gemara about Rabbi Kiva shows you that the Chotvim et HaMatzah that we talked about before is that we eat quickly. Because over here, he used to throw them out of the Beit Midrash to get there early so that they could start with the kids and do things quickly. So that's why Rashi says that shows you that you should eat quickly. Although it's interesting because the Haggadah and most of the props of the night take place prior to the eating of the night. So eating quickly is not necessarily relevant to the story of the Haggadah because the Haggadah is before Shulchan Aruch. But Rashi brings that as a proof. The Rashbam says as an aside, you could just say that the Gemara brought them together because topically they make sense or they're connected of this idea of keeping the children engaged. Doesn't mean that they have the same reason or for the same reason. And he says he doesn't think that that's necessarily a definitive proof to Rashi's position. All right, Tan Rabbanan. Chayav Adam L'Sameach Banav U'Bnei Beito Berego. A person's obligated to make happy his children and the household, his wife, on the regular. Shenamar. Because the Pasuk says, V'Samachta B'Chagecha. The truth is that the Gemara, the Tosafot had a different girsa in our Gemara, and they said, V'Samachta Ata U'Veitecha. They brought a different Pasuk, which is, the Pasuk there is better in terms of it's defining who you have to be Misameach, not just yourself, but Beitecha. Problem is that Pasuk is not found by Yom Tov, it's found by Maaser Sheni. Although, you might have brought that Pasuk to indicate or to show you that Simcha involves the broader household and not just the individual itself. The Torah in other places shows you that it's a machtav, doesn't just mean you, but it means a ta uve techa, including your family. Now, b'memesamcham, how do you make them happy? B'yayin, with wine. Behuda omer, Rabbi Yehuda raises the issue, we saw Rabbi Yehuda before, with regards to the arba kosot, and here, Rabbi Yehuda seems to do the similar thing, which is, anashim bira'ui lahem, the men with what's ra'ui for them, which would indicate the wine, the nashim bira'ui lahem, and the women with what's right or proper for them. Anashim bira'ui lahem, which is the yayin, the wine, v'nashim b'mai, what are the women, what are you mislameach them with? Tani Rav Yosef b'bavel, in Bavel they use bigdei tzib onim, colored clothing, Beretz Yisrael b'bigdei pishtan meguhatzim, with these pressed linen garments. And whether it was because here they had hotter weather and that's why they had these, or as Rashi or the Shabbat mentioned over here, that they didn't know how to do meguhats in Bavel. They did not know how to properly press in Bavel. That has implications for the time period of the 9 days as well, which is that because we are not experts in meguhatsim, that's one of the restrictions in terms of laundering our clothing during the 9 days. They weren't experts outside of Eretz Yisrael in this meguhatsim, so maybe that's why that was only true in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's interesting here is that there's an obligation of simcha. The obligation of simcha here for the men is the wine, and for the nashim is with the clothing. You have to ask a number of questions, the first of which is, why are women chayavot in simcha tachag? It's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama. Mitzvah taseh shazman grama, women are tzurot. So why over here is there an obligation in terms of simcha or samachta b'chagecha for the women? So one approach that's brought by the Achronim is to say that the tour of mitzvah seisha zman grama only deals with mitzvot, obligatory mitzvot that don't result in a benefit or hana. Mitzvot in general, lav la'anot nitnu, are not given for any benefit or personal benefit. And therefore, the paradigmatic mitzvot that we use to show us that mitzvah seisha zman grama do not apply to women all involve things that have no hana involved with them. On the other hand, this mitzvah, which involves the woman being the beneficiary of the mitzvah, over here, maybe there is no patur, we don't apply the patur, mitzvah d'ashay, so it's van gama, why would you apply it to have them lose out? And so therefore, some of the achronim believe that this is not where you apply the patur of mitzvah d'ashay, so it's van gama. The other approach of some of the rishonim, including Tosafot, the Bala Maor, and others, is that it's true. Women are pturot from simchat achag. The obligation is on the husband. It says here, you can read in the Gemara, b'meh misamcham, misameach. The husband, the father, has to provide the simcha. He has to provide the simcha of his household for himself, and then for his wife and for his children. So you're right, the obligation is not on them. They are the beneficiaries of his mitzvah, which is that he has to be misameach them. The question is why? And that might have to do with the fact that he has to be happy on Yom Tov. Right, exactly. So if you make the household and your wife happy, then your happiness will be b'shlei muta. So otherwise, the simcha will be curtailed in some way if you're the only one who's happy at the table. Maybe if you drink enough wine, you'll be happy anyway. The truth is that misamcham, it sounds like here that it's a part and parcel of the mitzvah of the ish to be sameach b'chago, is that it involves the parties and the household. And we know that's true because in the list of people that you have to be samachta, over there, it's you, your household, and then it talks about the poor. And the Rambam writes this explicitly, it's a beautiful Rambam. The Rambam says that any person who locks the doors to his house and then has a feast and everybody's happy and enjoying themselves and leaves all those that are poor and less fortunate to their own devices and does not provide for them, eino simchat yom tov elo simchat kreiso. That's not the simcha of Yom Tov, but that's the simcha of your stomach. It means that you're providing for yourself, but you're not taking care of others. And so the ikar of simcha is really taking care of others and providing for others. both on the micro level, which is the family, the immediate family, or on the broader level, taking care of the Klal Yisrael as a whole, those that are less fortunate, those that don't have the ability to be mesamech themselves. So therefore we see that Simcha is not just about me, the person themselves, but rather about all the people surround that individual and giving to them and making them happy. So that would be another reason why they'd be included. The next thing we have to deal with, which the Gemara is going to raise now, is what exactly, in terms of how do we know what makes up Simchat Yom Tov? What are the parameters of this? Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteir Omer, Bezman Beit HaMikdash Kayam, when the Beit HaMikdash was extant, Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar. Simcha only came about through Basar, through meat. Shenemar, V'Zavachta Shlamim, V'Achalta Sham, V'Samachta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha. This is actually brought by the Shlamim by Har Eival, which has nothing to do with Simchat Yom Tov. Tosfot again questions the use of this pasuk rather than Samachta Bechagecha, but he says here in this pasuk, it's explicit that there's a correlation between Simcha and Shlamim. And because of that, they bring this pasuk, despite the fact that it has nothing to do with Yom Tov, to show you that Shlamim are the central part of Simcha.
So it's not Basar.
Right, correct. It's not just Basar, it's Basar Shlamim. Be'achshav, Shem Beit Mikdash Kayam, now that the Mikdash is not extant, Ein Simcha Ela Bayayim. Then the Simcha shifts from Basar or Basar Shlamim in particular to Simcha Bayayin, Shinemar. Bayayin is Samach Levavenosh, because we had the Basit that wine is something that brings joy to the hearts of man. So from this you have a definition of what is considered to be Simchat Yom Tov. Now, first of all, two things. One is, it would indicate from here that there is Simchat Yom Tov Mido Oraita today. The requirement of Simchat Yom Tov might have shifted, but it seems to be that at least there is a din of Simchat Yom Tov de'oraita, which is that in the time of Mikdash it involved Basar Shlamim, today it involves Yayin. That would seem to be the implications of the braita that we just brought. Although, there's a Tosafot, we'll get to this in Moed Katan and Yudalad Amud Bet, who suggests that Simchat Yom Tov without Basar Shlamim is only a din de'rabbanan. It's not a din de'oraita. Once we shift away from Basar Shlamim to Yayin, that's also a shift of a kiyum d'oraita to a kiyum d'rabbanan. And therefore today there's only a din d'rabbanan of Simchat Yom Tov, no, not a din d'oraita of Simchat Yom Tov. This has major implications in terms of avelut. Because avelut is only a din d'rabbanan, according to many of the Rishonim. Many of the Rishonim have that the first day of avelut may be d'oraita, and the question is when you come into contrast.
Conflict.
When you have both Yom Tov and avelut that are vying, who wins out or what wins out? Can Yom Tov override Avelut? Well, it depends what level you think the Avelut is on and what level you think the Simchat Yom Tov is on. So that has major implications. We'll do that or deal with that when we get to Moed Katan. The other interesting thing, which is something that's always quoted, is the Rambam says, with regards to Yom Tov, Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar V'Yayin. The Rambam quotes, for Simchat Yom Tov, Basar V'Yayin. Where does he get that from? The Beit Yosef raises with regards to the Rambam. He says, I don't know where the Rambam got this from. How does he know that Ein Simcha Ela Basar B'Yayin? Basar, it's clear here in the Gemara, is about Basar Shlamim, not just Basar in general. So now, if he's talking about Yayin, Yayin already indicates he's talking about post-Mikdash. He's talking about post-Mikdash, then it's Yayin and not Basar. And if it's during the Mikdash, then it's Basar Shlamim. But the Rambam just says, Ein Simcha Ela Basar B'Yayin, writes it without any qualifications of Basar Shlamim, and includes both Basar V'Yayin. It's the famous quote that everybody quotes here, Ein Simcha Ela Basar V'Yayin. But that's the Rambam. Where did the Rambam get it from? And the Beit Yosef does not understand where the Rambam got it from. And in codifying it in Shulchan Aruch, he writes that Ein Simcha, when it comes to the Yom Tov, he writes just Yayin. That the major focus of Simcha is Yayin, like the Mishnah Berurah writes, is Yayin. Now, it might apply also, just more broadly, the Mishnah Berurah writes that Simchat Yom Tov might apply not just to Yom Tov, but to Chol HaMoed as well. So therefore, there might be a necessity or might be proper to also have Simcha and Chol HaMoed, which would involve Yayin as well on Chol HaMoed. But where did the Rambam get this from? The Bach comes to defense of the Rambam and says it's really not that the Gemara is saying here Basar or Yayin. The Gemara is indicating to you which is primary in different periods of time. Then in the time of the Mikdash, the primary form of Simcha comes through Basar Shlamim. And so therefore the focus of the Bright is on Basar Shlamim, not to the exclusion of Yayin, but Basar Shlamim could be the one that thing that brings you all the Simcha, because that's the primary item. Yayin could also work, but you could just use Basar Shlamim. Post-Mikdash, Basar Shlamim is not around, So yayin becomes the primary focus or the substitute for the basar shlamim. But it doesn't mean necessarily that basar went away or that yayin all of a sudden appeared. Yayin was always there and basar is always there. And that's how he defends this position of the Rambam, that we're not talking about mutually exclusive items, but rather a balance between what is primary and what is secondary. When it's the Mikdash, the primary item is Basar Shlamim, and that's the only way to accomplish Simcha. Post-Mikdash, then Yayin becomes the primary object through which we accomplish Simcha, because we have a pasuk that tells it as Simcha. That's one way to deal with it. Other of the Achronim, quote, there's a Gemara in Chagiga, which also we'll get to, with regards to whether Ofot and Menachot qualify for Simchat Yom Tov. Here you say Basar Shlamim, what about Ofot and Menachot? So the Gemara rejects that and says that Ofot and Menachot do not qualify for Simchat Yom Tov, because you need to have Mishu B'mino Simcha. Something that within its min, within its category has Simcha, and the Gemara associates that with Basar. So if you extrapolate that or take that to its end, that would indicate that Basar Shlamim is a category rather than a particular item. So Basar has a din of Simcha. Basar Shlamim is the best way to do it when you have that opportunity to bring a Korban, but that means that Basar itself does have a din of Simcha. And since it has a din of Simcha, it's still applicable even outside of the Mikdash, and therefore the Rambam codifies it as being Basar V'Yayin. But it's just important to note that the Yayin is still the central theme, even according to those that are defending the Rambam, here based on the Gemara here, that Yayin is the central way of Simcha on Yom Tov, as well as for times that we require Simcha. Now, Basar is mentioned, Mishnah Berurah mentions it, as well as the Shulchan Aruch, with regards to Yom Tov and Shabbat, that one should have Basar, but it seems to take much more of a secondary role as being the Simcha, because that's just about the Suda. That's about the idea of having a lavish Suda, that it should involve Basar, that one should expend the money to have Basar on these days. So that's true, but the Yayin still takes that primary focus. And it has to do with our Gemara here, that Yayin takes the central role once the Mikdash is no longer extant. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kasta de Morisa. The Kasta was a measuring cup of some sort. It was a utensil. De Morisa of the fish brine, the way they used to sell the fish brine, Bahavi Bitsipori, that was in Sipori, he, Havat Kamin Luga de Mikdasha, was the equivalent of the log in the Mikdash. Now this is important because Uva Misharim, Revi'it Shel Pesach. Because that you can use to measure the Revi'it of Pesach. When we talk about that you have to have a Revi'it is a quarter. It's a quarter of what? So we say that it's a Revi'it HaLog. So Revi'it HaLog is what we're looking for. So now if I know what the log in the Mikdash looked like, I can also figure out what a Revi'it looks like over here. Now we had this back. The Gemara and Erevin Tosafot raises it here as well, which is that the Revi'it, there they argued about whether Revi'it, it just says a quarter. The Gemara never defines here what the Revi'it is. Is Revi'it a Revi'it a Kav? Quarter of a Kav or a quarter of a Log? Tosfot argues that it's Revi'it a Log. The Rabbeinu, Rashi brings from his Rebbeim that it's a Revi'it a Kav. Tosfot from our Gemara here, and the continuation of the Gemara proves that it's gotta be a Revi'it a Log, and not a Revi'it a Kav, otherwise the math doesn't work out, which we're in the Gemara coming up. So here, what you did was, according to the Rashbam, you take this and you pour it out into four cups, and then you know how much wine you need for Pesach, a revit for each cup. You take the log and you divide it into quarters, and now you have your revit for Pesach. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Tamniyata kadmaita. Tamniyata is a measurement. Kadmaita means the old one. The old tamniyata. Tahava bitveria. Havat yitera da is in excess of the current tamniyata, riva. A riva, quarter of a log. Ubamishayim revit shel Pesach. And then you can use that to figure out what the revit of Pesach is. If you take the old measurement and the new measurement, and you pour them one together, the excess will be a Revi'it HaLog. That's what I just told you here. The excess is a Revi'it HaLog. If that's the case, you can figure out what the Revi'it HaLog is that you need for Pesach. So these are ways to measure a Revi'it HaLog. Then, Amar Rav Chista. Revi'it Shel Torah. The Revi'it HaLog of Torah is, if you want to know the cubic measurements of what would contain that volume of Revi'it HaLog, it's Ba'ayim al Etzba'ayim. It's two finger breaths by two finger breaths, birom, with a height of etzba'ayim v'chatzi etzba, two finger breaths, plus a half a finger breath, v'chomash etzba, plus a fifth of an etzba, or the equivalent of 2.7 etzba'ot. So if you want to know what the cubic measurements of something that can contain a revi'it halog, it's 2 by 2 by 2.7 etzba'ot. That's the cubic measurement that contains a revi'it alog. Now, how do we know that, or where does he get this measurement from? That's based on another gemara that we've seen before, which is Kedetanya. We have a brayta. Rechatz b'mayim et kol bisaro. So that's now, the pasuk says that in order to go to the mikveh, he has to put his body into the water. Shelo yehi davar chutzeitz ben bisaro l'mayim. That nothing should separate between him and the water. It says he has to put his basar into the mayim. So that's the first thing, no chatzitza. Then, b'mayim b'mei mikveh. So when it says b'mayim instead of b'mayim, it teaches you that it has to be b'mei mikveh. It has to be waters that were captured specifically for this purpose. You can't use mayim shu'uvim. You can't just bring water from anywhere, drawn water. It has to be water that was caught in the mikveh because it says b'mayim. That you have to immerse into the waters, not b'mayim with the waters, but in the waters themselves. And that teaches you it has to be mei mikveh. Ev kol b'saro. Kol comes to teach you. Mayim shekol gufo ole behen. Water in which his entire body fits. V'kamahein. And what does that mean that his entire body fits into it? That is the size of a mikveh. The size of a mikveh is ama alama b'rom shlosh amot. Cubic measurements of a mikveh in order which a person can fit into is an ama by an ama by 3 amot tall. 1 by 1 by 3 is the measurement in amot of a cubic mikveh. B'shiru chachamim. And the chamim measured it. Shiur mi mikveh. How much water is contained with this, in this cubic measurement? Arba'im sa'ah. 40 sa'ah. So it contains 40 sa'ah in here. And that's the minimum requirement for a mikveh is 40 sa'ah. Based on these cubic measurements of 1 by 1 by 3 amot, that gives you 40 sa'ah. Now first of all, in terms of the sizing of 1 by 1 by 3, right, so Tosafot already discusses this. It comes up in other places, including in Baba Batra. When it talks about the kuchim there, when it talks about the catacombs, it tells what size the catacomb has to be to fit a human being into it. So over there it says that you have to have a 1 by 1 ama in order to get the person plus the aron into there. So 1 by 1 is actually more than you need to get a human being in there. Although Tosafot says over here, you need a little more space because the person has to get in there without touching the walls. If he touches the walls, he has a chatzitza. So even though the person can fit into less than 1 by 1, you still need a 1 by 1 in order for him to immerse and not be caught by the walls. That's number one. So there they assume that they could get him in there straight because there, the Gemara says that a kuch has to be 4 amot deep so that the person can lay down. Tosafot says, well, wait a minute, we only have 3 amot over here. Here the mikveh is 3 amot. If you're telling me that a person's 4 amot tall, I have a problem. We actually discussed this back in Gemara Shabbat and Sadi Bet Amud Aleph with regards to the aron, the carrying of the aron by the Kohanim. Over there the Gemara talks about, and Rashi and Tosafot disagree about how high up they held the aron above. How tall is the person? So Rashi quotes the Gemara here that a person's 3 amot tall. Tosafot says that's not true. If you look at Baba Batra, a person is 3 amot tall without their head. But if they keep their head on, then it's 4 amot tall. The head includes another ama. Okay, which is also difficult. The head being an ama relative to the 3 amot of the body is not such a proportional amount. But leaving that aside, still he thinks that 3 amot only reaches up to the shoulders. And now he runs into the problem here, which is, well, if the mikveh is only 3 amot high, how's this guy getting himself into the mikveh? So he has two solutions. One is, he bends his head over. That's one solution to the problem, although you don't really have a lot of space to bend your head over. Then he says, which seems to me to be a better solution, it makes a lot of sense, is he says when you enter the mikveh, you have water displacement. I mean, your body causes water displacement. So if you go into the mikveh that's 3 amot high, your body will then cause the water to rise up to your above your head because of the displacement from the body. And therefore it'll cover your head.
Flow out.
Ah, so that's what Tosafot says here, that the size of the mikveh is only the cubic measurements for the water. But that means that the mikveh has to be at least 4 amot high so that when you go in there and displace the water, it doesn't flow out. Otherwise, you'd lose the shear of 40 sa'ah, you wouldn't have it. It says that the walls of the mikveh actually have to be higher than 3 amot to stop the water from leaving, but also so that when you're submerged, your head goes in as well. So that has Tosafot explains it. Now, the other piece of this is, how does the Gemara get from 1 by 1 by 3 amot, that's 40 sa'ah, to the conclusion, which is that a revi'it alug is 2 by 2 by 2.7 etzba'ot. So there, the Rashbam, Rashi, that's what they all do, the calculation. Now, they're very challenged by their calculations. I don't want to bog you down in their calculations. They do the calculations, they work it out, but their major challenge is that they don't have multiplication and division. They don't have long division, and they don't have multiplication. So what they end up doing is, through a visual basis, they try to then subdivide. They take up something, they break it down based on the breakdowns they use for division are the differences between measurements. Meaning, for instance, an ama equals 6 tefachim. So there I could subdivide an ama into 6 tefachim without doing any advanced math or division. And we know that a tefach equals 4 etzba'ot. So using that as their math and then subdividing it randomly, like saying 16 strips of this and that, they're able to break it down into this number. And it works. They get there. It takes them a long time, but they do get there. The easiest way for us to do this is to take the cubic measurements here. That if I can match up the cubic measurements, I can prove to you that it's right. So if we start here, let's start with the Revi'i Talug. Revi'i Talug, I said to you, is 2 etzba'ot by 2 etzba'ot by 2.7 etzba'ot. So if I take that and I multiply it out, that's 2 times 2 is 4. 4 times 2.7 is 8. Plus 2.8, which is 10.8, will turn out to be 10.8 cubic etzba'ot. So they're suggesting that a Revi'i Talug is captured by 10.8 cubic etzba'ot. Now, if I translate the mikveh into etzba'ot, I just told you before we have the measurements. We have the measure, which is 1 amah by 1 amah by 3 amot. And amah translates into 6 tfachim, which means that this mikveh is 6 tfachim by 6 tfachim by 3 times 6 is 18 tfachim. And if I break down the tefachim into etzba'ot, we said that there are 4 etzba'ot in each tefach. That means the 6 now becomes 24. So that means I have 24 etzba'ot by 24 etzba'ot, and then 4 times 18, which is 72. It's 24 times 24 times 72 etzba'ot, which gives you in cubic etzba'ot 41,472 cubic etzba'ot. So if I take that 41,472 and divide it by 10.8, I would get the differential between the cubic size of a mikveh to the cubic size of a Revi'i Talug. It turns out that that number is 3,840. You can do the math afterwards and check, but that's 3,840. It's important because now I can go, what is the movement from sa'ah to a log? Right, so now if I do this, if I start out with a sa'ah contains within it 6 kav. Each kav contains within it 4 log. That means that each sa'ah is equal to 24 log. Now, that's 24 log. Now, I know that I have 40 sa'ah in the mikveh. So if I take the 40 sa'ah in the mikveh times that 24 log, 40 times 24, it's 800 plus 160 is 960 log. So 40 sa'ah equals 960 log. But I'm only looking for a quarter log, not a full log. So I have to multiply 960 times 4. 960 times 4, 4 times 900 gives you 3,600. 4 times 60 is 240, 3,840. So you see that the division is right. The cubic measurement from the mikveh in etzba'ot down to the cubic measurements in etzba'ot for Revi'i Talug, that differential which you said was 3,840, gives you the same differential when you start at 40 sa'ah and end up with a Revi'i Talug. So therefore, that's how we know that the math is correct. Again, a much faster way to do it than the way that it's done here by the Rishonim, again, because they don't have this ability to do the division or the multiplication like the way we just did it now. Amar Ravashi, Amar li Ravin bar Chinina, Shulchan shel Mikdash shel Prakim havo. The Shulchan of the Mikdash was made out of pieces. Disak adatra duke havim hadek, if you say that it was either tightly put together or it was all one piece, Amta ba'amta echemit betbele. An amah by an amah, how do they get it into the mikveh? If you tell me, how do you get into the mikveh? So now you have a problem. Right, so you could get it in a diagonal, but you have a problem. The shulchan is not exactly an amah by an amah. The measurements of the shulchan, we're talking about something that has dimensions that are matai marko, 2 amot in length, amah rochbo, 1 in width, and amah v'chetzi komato, and 1.5 high. So if I'm already doing that, it's very hard to get into a mikveh that's one by one. Even on the diagonal, it'd be difficult to get it in. Mostly because the legs cause you a huge problem. So it's hard to get in. So what he's suggesting is that it has to be broken up into pieces. One of those things is that he says that the actual top of the shulchan, which is 2 by 1, really has to be broken into 2 pieces of 1 by 1. Now once you've done that, you can get them in on the diagonal. If you have 1 by 1 pieces on the flat top, you can get them in. And then you get the legs in separately. So that's what his suggestion is. That's otherwise has he fit it in. Now, the obvious answer to the problem is, why do you have to have a mikveh that's 1 by 1 by 3? That's the minimum standard of a mikveh. That doesn't mean the mikveh has to be that size. You can solve your problem, which is basically what the Gemara says. It says, my kushya, dilma b'yam shal shlomo, avi matpile. Who says he puts it into a mikveh? He can put it into yam shal shlomo, The Tani Reb Chia, Yamsha Sa Shlomo, this we did in the beginning of Erevin, we did the measurements there, I won't go over them again now. Machzik, Mea V'chamishim Mikveh Tahara. Holds 150 mikvot. 150 mikvot, plenty of space to get the Shulchan in there, and it won't be a problem anymore. So again, you could have, volumetrically, you could have a mikveh that's big enough to handle the Shulchan. There's no proof, just because these are the minimum standards doesn't mean that you don't have a mikveh that could fit the Shulchan if you just have a bigger mikveh. Right now we enter into a sugya. It's a difficult sugya that's coming up. We only touch on it tangentially today. We'll get into it more deeply tomorrow. Today we still have some things that have actually implications of halacha. Tomorrow it's going to get to move a little bit further away from that. Alright. How did the Rabbanan put in place something that could lead to a dangerous situation? So over here, they put together that you have to drink 4 cups of wine on the night of the Seder. V'hatanya, don't we have a brayta? Lo yochal adam trei, lo yishte trei, v'lo yikaneach trei, v'lo yisitz rachav trei. A person should not do things in pairs, meaning even numbers. You should only do things in odd numbers, not in even numbers. You should not eat 2 things, not drink 2 things. He should not, whether it's relieve himself or wipe himself twice, he should not engage in relations twice. All these things are even numbers. Those are problematic because they are what we call zugot. Again, we'll spend more time on that tomorrow. So I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Akra. Nachman says, the pasuk says, Leil Shimurim. The night of Pesach is a Leil Shimurim, Leil HaMishumar Uva Min HaMizikim. It's a night that is promised to be guarded and protected from the Mazikim. We don't worry about the Mazikim on the night of Pesach. That is both the practice that we have in the Seder, where we say, Shfoch Chavatcha Al Goyim, and you open up the door, and we invite Eliyahu Navi in. But that Shvoch HaMatcha comes from this idea that Leil Shumarim, we don't feel the fear on that night. We feel empowered. In addition to that, which is the practice that people on the night of Pesach do not say the full Kriyat Shema al Hamita, because it's a Leil Shumarim. They just say the Brach of Amapil and Shema, not all the other Pesukim that we say to protect oneself from the Mazikim at night, because the night of Pesach is a Leil Shumarim. It's a night that's protected from Mazikim. We don't worry about the Mazikim. So that's one answer. One answer is, it's irrelevant on the night of Pesach, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. Rav Amar, Koshel Bracha, Mitzteref LeTova, Ve'en Mitzteref LeRa'a. When it comes to a Koshel Bracha, the Koshel Bracha only can be to your benefit, not to your detriment. That means that if you already had even numbers, the Koshel Bracha can be added on to get you an odd number and protect you from Zugot. On the other hand, if you have even numbers, Koshel Bracha is not subject to the Mazikim. Since it's a Koshel Bracha, it doesn't have this problem of being mitzaref the ra'ah. Even though the Rava later on in the Gemara, both the Rashbam and Tosafot raised this issue here, Rava later on in the Gemara says that vayishmachal the ra'ah lo mitzaref, something that's there to protect you doesn't come together to make zugot. So then why does he need this other reason over here? So the Rashbam says that only protects you from the mazikim. That doesn't protect you from kshafim. So you have to worry about other forms. Meaning that even though if you're protected from mazikim, you still need also protection from people who are trying to impose on you bad things, including kshafim, sorcery, or witchcraft. And therefore, you need this din that koshel bracha is not subject to this. Ravina Amar, so the Ravina says, Arba'a kasei takinu rabbanan. There are 4 kosot that the rabbanan instituted, derech chirut. Derech chirut, v'chol chad v'chad mitzvah ba'apei nafshuhu. Each one of them is an independent mitzvah. Like right, so it's not that they are making pairs here, because there are no pairs. They're all independent mitzvot. How independent are they as mitzvot? Right, so that's the question, because this has implications halachically based on how independent they are. Are they considered to be one mitzvah still, or independently? So the Rashash says, Mikan yirali, the dal kosot ein ma'akvim zedzeh. What happens if a person only has enough wine for 3 kosot? Should he do the 3 kosot, or are the 4 kosot ma'akev? He quotes our Gemara here and says, from here it seems pretty clear that they're independent mitzvot. You should do them independently, meaning that you can have 3 kosot. If you only have 3 kosot, there's no requirement to have 4 kosot. Other than the Maral disagrees and says, the Maral says here, when they say that they're independent mitzvot, it doesn't literally mean that they are independent and you can do 3 instead of 4. It just means that each one has its own independent reason, like we do in the Seder. Each one of the Seder has something associated with it. So they're independent in the sense that they have a certain amount of independence because they have a different reason. One of them is Kiddush, one of them is Agada, one of them is Halal, one of them is Birkat Hamazon. So that's why they're independent. But it's not that they're completely independent. They still are reliant on each other. You need 4 kosot. You can't skimp on that. You need absolutely 4 kosot. So here you have a machloket in the Achronim as to this idea. Now, it might also have to do with the source for the Arba Kosot. That might also relate this. If you say it's Arba Lishone Geula, it's hard to say that you could have one without the other. It means it's a whole entity. Whereas there are other sources brought by the Yerushalmi, and it was quoted by the Rashi earlier, about the word kos is mentioned three times by Yosef and Paro, with the butler, the word kos is mentioned four times there, therefore it's a source for it. Over there, each kos might be independent. It might have nothing to do with each other. There's no correlation between the kosot. Each kos just is a mention of a cup. So it might be the source of the Arba Kosot, might influence this issue as well. It also has implications in terms of the brachot, whether you have to make a bracha rishona and bracha chrona on the kosot, the Arba Kosot, because of the question of their independence. Depending on how independent they are of each other, will also impact on whether you need to make a bracha chrona and bracha rishona for each cup, or they're considered to be a singular entity, and therefore they can be covered by the same bracha. So that also has implications over here. So now the Gemara says, lo yaseh tzrachav trei, amai. Why shouldn't a person engage in relations twice? Nimlachu. When a person engages with his wife, he's not intending to do zugot up front. It happens to be that's what it turns out. I mean, whether it changed his mind or that the desire is there and he does it again, but you can't call it zugot. They're the equivalent of the Arba Kosot here being independent. They're independent items. Just because it happened twice doesn't mean that they are zugot. So, Amar Abaye, Achik Amar, Lo Yochal Trei, V'Yishta Trei, V'Lo Yasid Tzrachav. So now he says, you shouldn't eat two, drink two, mean that you shouldn't engage in zugot, and then afterwards, Yasid Tzrachav, and then afterwards engage in relations, Afilu Pamachat, even once, Dilma Cholish Umitra, because that will weaken his constitution, and by weakening himself, Umitra, things could go bad. So he says, be careful of zugot and these other items, and then don't get yourself into a position where you're weakened after you've been involved with zugot, because then you expose yourself to the mazikim. So that's the way they explain the brayta that we quoted before. That was the original brayta that we quoted about zugot. So here the Gemara defined why tashmish is not the same as these other items and why we worry about it. It's not about zugot there, it's about the post-zugot. Be careful about the tashmish. But again, the Gemara is trying to address why the Arba Kosot don't have a problem of zugot. We have three different answers. One is that it's Leil Shimurim. The other one is that Hoshal Bracha cannot be mitzarif to the negative. That can be your detriment. And the last one was that the Arba Kosot are actually independent. They are not considered to be singular entity. And therefore, you don't have Zugot over here. Okay, we'll stop here.